I hate this side of town. The flesh gallery was draped with gold in the failing sunlight. The slumping tenements, tired as the women who walked in their shadows, go-go boots and hot pants, fake rabbit fur jackets, each on her own prescribed piece of sidewalk. The overall impression of this section of Lucado Street has always been motion, hips swinging back and forth, eyes blinking and glittering under screens of makeup, teased hair, candy-glossed lips, most often marred by cold sores. The older girls worked the north end, the bargain basement. Diamond Ricky's turf was further south, prime real estate I could remember pacing years ago when it was Val's territory. We entered the brownstone. Diamond Ricky had some of the best merchandise, the youngest and prettiest. Teenage girls who each would have sworn that Ricky loved her and was protecting her. And of course, we suspected him of running an escort service that provided underage action for rich businessmen. No proof.
Yet.
Who is it?
It's Jill Kismet! Open the goddamn door, Ricky!
God damn it! Coming!
Normally, Ricky would be sitting out on the street in his Cadillac with some muscle, overseeing the action. But we'd managed to catch him at home with nobody but his girl. She tossed back her long brown hair and wiped at her nose with the back of her hand as I tilted my head, taking in the apartment. Huge entertainment system, white leather couch, trendy in the 80s Nagel print hanging on the wall. Ricky's tastes ran to chrome, glass, and leather, and every piece in here was bought with the money he took from the young girls outside, peddling their asses, scraping together enough to feed his appetite for luxury. I pulled the chair out from the dining room table, dragged it across the spotless white carpet. You wouldn't think to look at this place that it was merely a modest brownstone sandwiched between sloping, ramshackle apartment buildings filled with the desperate. Slim, greasy Ricky lounged on the white leather couch. He wore a black cowboy hat with silver scallops on the band, black silk button-down shirt, and leather pants. Cowboy boots with silver tips were propped on the low glass table in front of him. He gestured at the small square mirror tile laying on the table. Two lines of white powder were prominently on display.
Christ, do pimps ever change?
I shook my head, set the chair on the carpet at precisely the right angle. Saul leaned against the door next to Carp. Rosie was still at the scene. Carp's blue eyes were avid, flicking over every surface. I settled down on the chair, folding my arms and resting them on the back, knees on either side. Turned my unblinking gaze on Ricky while the number one wiped at her nose again.
Get out of here.
Okay, baby.
Ricky grinned, his fingers dangling loosely in his lap. An advertisement. He indicated the powder on the spotless mirror again, with a nod of his hat.
Feel free, puta. Or are you here to make some money? I turn you out after I test the merchandise, see?
His grin widened. He knew we wouldn't bust him unless it got difficult.
You son of a bitch.
The scar on my wrist throbbed. The smile began down deep. I let it rise to my lips. Waited for the right time to speak as Ricky shifted. It was that tiny movement, a flinch, that told me I had already unsettled him. He was a man who lived off mind-fucking women, and I was just aching to do a little in return. Even it out for the female species, so to speak. I waited, let the smile bloom. He was Puerto Rican, so I let the tiger's eye rosary dangle, hunching my shoulders and resting my chin on my crossed forearms. My eyes would do half the work for me. It's funny how many cultures have weird legends about people born with different colored eyes. Only I was born with brown eyes. The blue one is a gift, or a curse.
Whichever it is, I don't care, as long as it works.
I looked at Ricky's nose. If you stare right at the bridge of a man's nose, he thinks you're looking him in the eyes. The gaze grows piercing, intense, and the man starts to sweat. Especially if he's done something wrong. His eyes flicked past me to the door. Carp was probably grinning. Saul, of course, would be staring unblinkingly at Ricky, daring him to make a move.
What do you want, puta?
I slid the gun free of its holster, rested my elbow on the chair back, and pointed the barrel at the ceiling. The pimp stiffened.
Call me a whore again, Ricky, and I'm gonna shoot your balls off. Baby Jewel.
What about her? Hey, man, she swears she's 18. You can't pick no...
Did she get uppity with you, cabron? Stop handing over the cash? What was it?
I've never seen a man turn white as curdled milk so fast. Ricky's number one girl came around the corner, her eyes as big as dinner plates. I didn't move. If she needed taking care of, Saul would handle it.
Jewel? Oh, she... I mean... Oh, she... Listen, I did nothing...
Shut up, Ricky. Now, Jewel was working for you last night. When did you last see her? When did she drop off her last load of cash?
9. She worked the early shift, man.
Vice had seen her at just past 10 or thereabouts. She must have hit the street again, maybe trying to make her rent now that she'd paid Ricky off. Or had she?
How much did she give you, Rick? And keep in mind that I can smell a lie, you greasy little piece of shit.
What are they talking about, Ricky? Is this true?
The girl behind me was quivering. She knew something.
Good luck getting her to spill. If she told us anything, Ricky would probably demote her. A fate worse than death. Still, I might be able to try if I can catch her alone. A lot'll depend on the next few minutes. And a lot'll depend on if I can keep my temper.
She gave me 400 or 500. Sent her back out. Her pink ass can make 4 times that if she works. Lazy bitch. They all lazy.
And you're such a self-made man. She didn't show up all day today, and you didn't check on her?
Check on her. The bitch comes back. She begs for a little Ricky's love, Bruja. They all do.
So, we've gone from calling me slut to witch. Well, it's an improvement.
Just like Sylvie? Did she come back begging too?
Oh, shit.
I moved.
Yeah.
I brought the chair down squarely on the glass table. Before Ricky could move, I was on him. My knees sank into the leather of the couch. My left-hand finger sank into his throat. I smelled quesadilla and cologne, not to mention the thin, acrid funk of a coke fiend. I pressed the gun to his temple and smiled into his eyes. This was pure terrorization for its own sake. I am not a very nice person. And if there's one thing I hate with a vengeance that surpasseth all understanding, it's pimps. I never pass up a chance to make a pimp feel my displeasure.
I would as soon blow your head off as look at you, you greasy little cocksucker. Now, I'm going to ask you a few simple questions. Sylvie, Jewel, what did you do to them?
I didn't think for a second that he had much to do with it. Mostly because the girls were worth more to him alive and peddling their wares.
And also because Ricky is, like all pimps, a fucking coward.
He spilled a lot. Enough for me to determine a few things. He hadn't even known Jewel was dead before we came calling. He also was more than willing to spill about the escort service. And I let him talk about that for a little while. Then he dropped one more piece of news.
You're sure?
Of course I'm sure, you stupid bitch. There's a doctor on Kinkoa, Polish fucker, name's Greco Ace. He takes care of that shit, but it ain't cheap. Stupid bitch, stupid fucking bitch.
I reholstered the gun and was off the couch in one motion. The number one girl stood by the entrance to the kitchen, her fingers pressed to her mouth and her eyes huge, dark, and full of tears. I looked over at Carp, who was almost purple with restrained glee. It did him good to see me do something like this. Something a regular cop wouldn't be able to do without worrying about a brutality lawsuit.
You want to take him in?
Not worth our time right now.
I agree.
I looked at the girl. Tears slicked her cheeks, and the way her eyes jittered away from mine told me there wasn't much hope of questioning her. There was a fading bruise just visible under the scoop collar of her pink shirt. She couldn't have been more than 18, but was already looking old.
Do yourself a favor, honey. Get out of the biz. Before you end up just as dead as those other two girls. Carp, Saul, Let's get the hell out of here.
Pregnant. Ricky had said Sylvie was pregnant.
This puts a little different shine on things, doesn't it? 2 counts of murder for her and her baby. And all her internal organs gone. Why?
Well?
My initial reaction? He's got nothing to do with it. Could be chance. You know how it is. The escort service, though...
Yeah?
It gives me an idea. More than an idea, in fact. Shit. I'm going to have to go see him early.
Saul stirred restlessly in the booth beside me, tucking into his hash browns. His eyes flicked over the inside of the restaurant, a hole-in-the-wall diner on Holmer. I passed him the salt and the green Tabasco, shuddering at the thought of kissing him afterward.
I will never understand men and Tabasco sauce.
Rosenfeld was settled into the booth across from us, next to Carp. She had short auburn hair, a strong-jawed, too-striking-to-be-pretty face, and wrists that put mine to shame, even though mine are hellbreed strong. Rosenfeld examined me suspiciously.
Don't suppose you've got anything useful, Jill?
Not yet.
I blew across my coffee to cool it. Carp I could lie to. Monty encouraged me to keep it close to the vest. But Rosie liked it out where she could see it, and tried to act like working with me didn't bother her. Rosenfeld had only questioned my judgment once. That was during the Cheney case. The next day, she'd seen an Arceus, up close and personal. I had almost been too late to save her, and she had seen me take my wrist cuff off and battle the thing hand to hand. After a week in the hospital, she'd actually come down to the warehouse and apologized. Something I had no idea a cop could do. She was probably still dyeing her hair to cover up the white streak. I had no idea if she was still undergoing therapy. And I didn't ask.
Yeah, you should have seen it, Rosenfeld. Diamond Ricky pissed his pants.
I heard the vice guys giggling about it. Are you really going to eat that, Jill? My arteries are hardening just looking at it.
I need protein. Gotta keep my girlish figure.
We should all be so lucky. So what do you think?
Sylvie was pregnant. Ricky was going to send her to a doctor on Kinkoa. I'll check him. Leave you two to talk to the other hookers. See if they can describe the last trick of the night for either of our girls.
I don't have to tell you we gotta work fast. We're not dealing with a couple of nice, middle-class, church-going girls here. There are only so many man-hours they'll spend on 2 dead hookers.
Same old story. Different day.
2 dead women in 2 days. If this accelerates, we're going to have problems.
Thanks for that lovely thought. Anything you want us to do other than talk to hookers and try to keep the press off our backs?
I've got someone to visit who might be able to shed a little light after I talk to the doctor. At least, he'll be able to tell me if someone's moved into town without permission.
And I've got to go back to the seminary and question a few kids, not to mention call Andy and... Oh, Christ, my dance card's full. As per usual.
Just be careful, okay? This isn't looking good.
Be more than careful. Be cautious.
Be cautious, Tonto says. Care to give any specific pointers, or will you just settle for being cryptic?
Shooting our mouths off before we know precisely what's going on will get us exactly nowhere. Don't give Saul a hard time. He works for me, not you.
We all work for the taxpayers, baby.
Yeah, so do the hookers. Eat up, boys and girls. There's work to do today.
The abortion clinic on Kinkoa had been closed by the time we got there. I used the payphone on the corner to leave a message on Carp's cell that we would try the doc tomorrow. I had a stop to make at the seminary, but I wanted to get the Monde Nuit out of the way first. I left Saul in the Impala smoking a Charvel and staring at the building with narrowed eyes. I walked up to the door, fitting the silver over my right hand. It was technically a set of brass knuckles, but made out of alloyed silver with just enough true content to hurt anything damned, but enough other metal to be twice as hard. The usual daylight bouncer was on duty, a massive guy with a tribal tattooed neck. I nodded to him and strode past. My blue eye widened, taking in the flux of bruised, hellbreed, tainted atmosphere. It was still daylight, never mind that the sun was fading fast. The Monde was almost deserted. One or two traders were in there drinking whatever it is the damned drink, and Riverson was at the bar again. A couple janitors were cleaning everything up, and waitstaff were getting ready for dusk. Perry was at a velvet-covered table in the back, three other hellbreed with him. They were playing what looked like a card game, and cigarette smoke fumed in the air. He didn't even glance up at me, but the scar on my wrist ran with throbbing prickles, a hurtful bloom on the underside of my arm. I was glad it was covered.
Hey! Hey!
I ignored Riverson. There were a few muscle-bound idiots in the shadows, too far from the hellbreed to be any help. My pace quickened. By the time I reached the table, they were converging on me. Perry's profile was supremely unconcerned, bent over his cards.
666 Sipodav. Sigur Shermutiban non rorepo oge.
Helatong. The speech of the damned. The ruby warmed against my throat on its silver chain. I kicked the chair out from under Perry and punched, catching him across the cheek and flinging him down and away. The next kick shattered the table. Oversized cards, cigarettes, and a half bottle of Glenlivet went flying. I reached down, grabbed Perry's shirt, and hauled him up left-handed. Blood flew. The silver armoring my fist would hurt him more than the force of the blow. I drew back again, silver suddenly hot on my fingers. I dropped him, then kicked him again. The gun left its holster left-handed, a feat I practiced long and hard to achieve in the dim first days of my training, and I set my feet on the floor, turning in a complete circle to see what I was up against.
Seven of them, not counting the goddamn breeds I just interrupted. Splendid.
Oh, sweet nothings. Kiss. So nice to see you again.
Back off or I'll fucking kill you all. They backed off. I reholstered the gun, bent down, and hauled Perry upright again.
I've put up with a lot of shit from you, Pericles. You and the rest of your hell's spawn scum. But no underage cooch. The rule's simple. No dabbling in the under 18 pool in my territory, right?
Oh, would we dare disagree?
I damaged one whole half of his bland, pale face. His blood-masked eyes glared at me. But he remained still. Perfectly still. Inhumanly still. Blood dripped from his chin. The skin over his cheekbone mashed into hamburger, his lacerated eye puffing up.
Never pretty in the first place, and a whole lot worse now.
We know this decree of yours.
We obey.
Oh yeah? Someone's breaking it. Using Diamond Ricky's teenage whores to feed a few bad appetites. And right now, my suspicion is squarely on the hellbreed population. I know how little self-control you bastards have. Whatever escort service supplying underage cooch you've got your fingers in, get out! Now! Or next time I come back, I'll shoot you in the fucking face. And I'll see this place loses its incognito appeal with the police.
Human police?
Don't fuck with me, Perry.
Oh, someday you might want me to. I'll live to hear you beg, Hunter.
Dream on, Hellspawn. Do we understand each other? Or do I have to kick your ass all around this cheap shit little shack?
The back of my neck prickled. I could feel them moving in on me.
I gotta think of something quick here.
Perry waved them away. Thin black ichor dripped on the floor, the wounds closing slowly, very slowly. Silver's deadly to them. Something about the moon and how she rules the tides of both sorcery and water. We don't fully understand why silver works. But no hunter I've ever run across cares. It's enough that it works.
I understand you perfectly, dear Kiss. But do you understand yourself?
Spare me the psychobabble.
I dropped it.
See you Sunday, Perry. Maybe I'll ruin another one of your suits.
I look forward to it. Try not to break anything next time.
Don't piss me off, and maybe I won't. Keep your ears open.
You could have just asked, Kiss.
You wouldn't have told me jack shit. Besides, maybe I like smashing your face in, Hellspawn.
My orange Impala gleamed at the curb, once again in the fire zone. Saul's cigarette sent lazy whirls of smoke into the air out of the passenger's side window. I stared past the red fuzzy dice hanging from the rearview mirror, watching the last of the day's light pour out of the sky's cup.
I think we're fucked. He knows something, maybe, but he won't give it up. Yet.
It isn't where. It isn't Hellbreed. At least not any Hellbreed or damned Perry has control over. It isn't a type of damned you've seen before. Whatever it is, it stinks of violence and fur. I haven't ever smelled anything like this, Jill. It's definitely not human. But I don't know what it is.
Something neither of us knows about. Something that attacks teenage hookers and divests them of their internal organs.
It stinks of ice and rotting flesh and magic. Bad, old, nasty magic.
You think Perry's involved?
This isn't his style, but I wouldn't rule him out.
Saul flicked his cigarette out the window.
What next?
The seminary. We need to figure out how an Uthuruk got into a nice corn-fed missionary boy. Then home to pick up a few things and call Andy. And no, I haven't forgotten. I want to pick his brains, as well as ask him to send his apprentice down here to cover for me.
Jill.
What?
Do you like visiting him?
What the hell are you talking about? One of these days, when I've figured out a lesser evil, I'm going to kill him. He's useful, Saul. Don't start.
I don't like the way he looks at you.
Neither do I, baby. Neither do I. I was on a hell of a run of bad luck, and more came in the form of information, as usual. The still unconscious Oscar hadn't had any visitors, but he had been in the room when another seminary student's aunt had visited. The aunt had been tall, dark-haired, and nobody could describe her face. Not even the priest who had signed her in and watched the visit, who just happened to be the heart attack victim, Father Rosas. The kid who'd been visited was a transfer student from out of state. A thin, rat-like teenage boy whose narrow eyes widened when I shoved the gun in his face. Strip! Now!
Somebody help! Ha!
Red-nosed Father Rourke almost fell to the floor, but Saul had him by the collar. Father Guillermo burst out of his chair so fast that it fell to the floor beside him.
Jillian!
Sorry, Father, but this kid might be dangerous. It's insurance.
You're a witch! Gee, you won't let her...
Father Rourke! Remember your oath!
The church!
The Archbishop and the Cardinal have given me provisional powers once there is proved to be supernatural cause. Keep yourself under control, Father, or Saul will drag you outside. Don't make him cranky. I don't recommend it. Now, strip, kid. Slowly. The cassock first. The boy trembled. The whites of his eyes were yellow. Acne pocked his cheeks. And I was 9/10 sure there would be a mark on him. Maybe not on his back, but somewhere on his body. A sorrow doesn't leave the house, living or dead, without a mark. One way or another, they claim their own, from a queen mother down to the lowliest male drone. The question of just what a young sorrow would be doing here in a seminary was the bigger concern, though. And just as I was sure the kid wasn't going to strip, he slowly lifted his hands, palms out.
Uh-oh. This doesn't look good.
Mjolnir!
The spell hit me hard in the solar plexus.
Jill!
I shook my head, blood flying from my lip, found myself on my feet, instinctively crouching. The rat-faced sorrow leapt for me. I caught his wrist, locked it, whirled, and had him on the ground. I spared a look at Saul. His tail lashed and his teeth were bared. He was in full cougar form, but his eyes were incandescent, and he was larger than the usual mountain cat. Wares tend to run slightly big, even in their animal forms. The tawny fur on the back of his neck stood straight up, and his tail puffed up just like a house cat's.
Shift back, Saul! I need this bastard held down!
What is she? What is she?
Stay back, Father Rourke! I can help you. I can help you, free you of the sorrows, and give you your soul back. No, I can. Cooperate!
It was always a fool's chance to try to free Asaro. Hunters always offer, but they almost never take us up on it. The mothers and sorceress bitches have things just the way they want them. All the power and none of the accountability. And the boys are drones, born into houses and trained to be nothing but mindless meat. The Saros worship the elder gods, after all. And those gods, like all gods, demand blood. The difference is, the elder gods like their claret literally, with ceremony, and in bucketfuls. Saul's hands came down, tensed, driving in. Immediately, it became much easier to keep the kid down. Working together, we got him flipped over. I held down the boy's hips, while Saul took care of his upper torso. The wearer's eyes were aflame with orange light. He was furious. He slid a long cord of braided leather into the kid's mouth, holding down one skinny wrist with his knee.
No poison tooth for you. Jill?
I'm fine. Hold him, Saul. Where's the mark? And what's a sorrow doing in here?
The boy's eyes rolled into his head. I tore his shirt open, ran my hand over his narrow, hairless chest. No tingle.
Where is the mark?
You witch! That's one of our kids!
Transferred from out of state? Your kid's in a ditch somewhere, Father Rourke. This is a sorrow. Probably just a little baby viper instead of a full-grown one, though. Or he'd have tried to crush my larynx instead of socking me in the gut. I suggest you wait outside in case he chews through the gag. The question is, why the sorrows are so interested in this seminary? And when I find the mark, we'll find out.
I yanked his pants down. Bingo. The mark was on his right thigh. The three interlocked circles in blue with the sigil of the black flame where they overlapped. He was a young soldier, not a man-drone, only fit for sacrifice or a pleasure slave. Of all the ranks a male could hold in a house, the soldiers had maybe the shortest life. But at least they weren't tied down and slaughtered to feed the eldest ones. I held up my hand. The bone handle of Saul's buoy landed solidly in my palm. Saul reached down, cupped the sorrow's chin, and yanked back, exposing the boy's throat and making sure he couldn't thrash his shoulders around. I laid the flat of the knife against the mark. Steel against Chaldean sorcery, one of the oldest enmities known to magic. The Elder Gods would have us all back in the Bronze Age if they could. They would have us killing each other to feed their hungry mouths as well. Still, there are some elders the sorrows don't invoke, because their very natures are inimical to the worship of darkness. Belief is a double-edged blade, and a hunter can use it as well as any other weapon.
Thou shalt be released, thou unclean, thou whom the gods have turned their face from. Thou shalt be released in the name of Thul the Magnificent, the Lighter of Fires.
Next came sliding the knife up and flaying the skin to get the mark off. I could add it to my collection. Each little bit of skin, drying and stretching and marked with their hellish brand, was another brick in the wall between me and the guilt of my teacher's death. Each time I killed a sorrow, I felt good. Cleansed.
I am not a very nice person. Now, last chance before you go to your hell. And believe me when I say that's one place you don't want to visit even for a moment. There. That's more like it.
I looked up at Saul, whose eyes still glowed.
Let him go, Saul.
What?
Just let him go.
Saul did not look the least bit happy, but he nodded, a quick dip of his chin, and released the pressure on the gag just a little. The rat-faced kid's eyes met mine. A spark flared in their tainted depths, swirling now that he had revealed himself. His skin began to look gray, too.
Wait a second. He isn't even an acolyte. What's he doing out of a house? Christ! Saul, ungag him!
Leather slipped free. But Saul was tense, and I saw his right hand relax from a fist into a loose claw, nails sliding free and lengthening, turning razor sharp. If the sorrow made a move, my wear would open his throat. What are you out here for, Neophime? Who's holding your leash?
Sister. My sister. Please.
I bit my lip, weighing it. On the one hand, the sorrows were trained to lie to outsiders. And on the other, no sorrow would ever use the word sister. The only word permitted for female within the house was mistress. Or occasionally bitch. Just like the only word for man was slave. I considered this, staring into the sorrow's eyes. What's a sorrow doing in my town, huh? You've been warned.
Fleeing. Fleeing. Chucharak.
The what? The sorrow crunched down hard with his teeth, bone cracking in his jaw. I whipped my head back and Saul did the same, scrambling away from the body in a flurry of were-fast motion. I found myself between the body and the priests, watching as bones creaked, the neurotoxin forcing muscles to contract until only the crown of the head and the back of the heels touched the floor. A fine mist of blood burst out of the capillaries of his right eye.
Poison tooth.
The sorrow had committed suicide, cracking the false tooth embedded in his jaw.
Damn it!
What's a chucharak?
I don't know. Gods above, why are they sending children? I hate the sorrows.
It's probably mutual.
Saul approached the body carefully. His lips moved silently. It was the wearer's prayer in the face of needless death. I left it alone. The poison was virulent, but it lost its potency on contact with a room full of oxygen. He was in no danger.
Julian?
You all right, Father Guillermo?
I think so. What do we do next?
Any other transfers in the last year? Priest, worker, student, anyone?
No, just Keith. Him.
Father Guillermo's eyes flickered past me to the body on the floor. The stink was incredible. Father Rourke kept crossing himself. He was praying, too. Sometimes I wished I was still wholly Catholic. The guilt sucks, but the comfort of rote prayer is nothing to sneeze at.
Nothing like pre-packaged answers to make a human psyche feel nice and secure.
I'll need to go over the transfer records.
It's... Julian, I...
Oh, for God's sake! I can't protect you if you don't tell me what I need to know!
Sister Julian!
What are you holding?
Julian!
I snapped. I grabbed the priest by the front of his cassock, lifted him up, and shoved him against the wall. The scar on my wrist turned to molten lead. Behind me, I sensed Rourke moving towards me.
Take one more step and I hit you, priest.
Rourke froze.
I could have died, Guy. Saul could have died. If I'd known you were holding something, I could have questioned him far more effectively. You cannot keep information from me and expect me to protect you.
He's a Jesuit. He can't tell you anything. He took a vow.
If you don't start talking in 15 seconds, Guy, I'm going to start searching. I'm going to tear this place apart from altar to graveyard until I find whatever you're holding. You might as well tell me now. What is it? What are the sorrows looking for?
It's nothing of any use to them. Merely an artifact.
What are you holding?
The spear of...
No!
Saint Anthony!
I released Guillermo and spun towards Rourke. His face was a mask of crimson.
Come on, I used to be Catholic. Don't pull this shit on me.
Saint Anthony didn't have a spear. He gave his staff to Saint Macarius.
It is the spear he blessed with his blood when the citizens of a small town were overwhelmed with the hordes of hell. He didn't use it. Marcus Silvacus used it.
Father Rourke's flabby cheeks quivered, and he was pale, too. I couldn't tell if I was smelling the stink of a lie on him or the reek of fear.
I'm gonna have to check that out. As far as I know, Marcus Silvacus never met Saint Anthony, and Saint Anthony didn't have a fucking spear.
I'm sorry, Guillermo, but you took a vow.
An artifact here? And it somehow slipped your mind to tell me, Guy? This isn't looking good. Years and years I've trusted you, and I've done the church's dirty work, peeling demons out of people before I was even fully trained. This is how you repay me?
The sorrow said he was fleeing. It might be unrelated.
Still, that's something I needed to know.
Agreed. It stinks of death in here. And we have work to do.
All right. Fine. But I won't forget this, Guillermo. I will never forget this.
I would have told you everything, Jillian. When I was released from my vow, I swear it, I would have. I didn't think the two were connected. But I can't speak of it.
Get that cleaned up. And give him a decent burial. He was only a kid.
Not in consecration.
Shut up! My eyes cut through Father Rourke. I felt my face harden. My blue eye began to burn, and I knew it was glowing, a single pinprick of red in the center of my pupil. Give him his last rites. If indulgence is required, Father, I'll pay. But for God's sake, bury him kindly. Saul had driven home. I wasn't in the mood. We hadn't spoken a word the entire time. I cast my eyes over the room as I swept into the warehouse, determining it was safe as I headed for the phone. This better be good news.
Hello to you, too.
What's the story, Avery?
Jill, there's a problem.
Oh, Christ. Not another one. The traitor I brought in? Avery was a professional exorcist, not a hunter like me. It was his job to exorcise the traitors I brought in, just like it was Eva, Benito, and Wallace's job to handle other straight exorcisms in my city and refer the extraordinary ones to me.
Nah, he was an easy rip and stuff. Screamed like a damned soul, though. He's on meds. No, the problem's different. I wanted to talk to you about it.
Meet me at Mickey's? Say, 11?
Sounds good. I'll buy you a beer.
What? I glanced over my shoulder. Saul had started rummaging in the kitchen. He was probably hungry. I was, too. The light shone mellow off his long red-black hair, silver glinting against the strands. His cheeks looked a little pale without the paint. He glanced up, probably feeling my eyes, and gave me a half-smile that made my legs feel decidedly mushy.
Will Saul be there?
Of course he will. He's my partner. And a damn fine one, too.
Bring him. Sorry. Look, 11 o'clock. See you then.
I hung up, feeling even more unsettled. And that was rare. Avery didn't have anything against wares. Not that I knew of, anyway. I dialed Andy's number from memory and got his answering machine. Left a message. The heavenly odor of sautéed onions tiptoed to my nose. And that meant steak. Bless wares and their domesticity. My eyebrows drew together. I had one more call to make.
Hutchinson's Books, used and rare.
Hutch, it's Jill.
Oh, good Christ, what now?
Relax, baby. I just need to use the back room. Want to do some research for me?
I'd rather gouge my own eyes out.
Wise man. That makes you much more intelligent than a number of people I know. Listen, scour for everything you can find about the Sorrows. Brush up on your ceremonial Chaldean and find me every mention of something called a chucharak.
Juice truck?
I could almost hear his teeth chattering. Cute, nervous Hutch was not cut out for hunter's work. But he was hell on wheels when it came to digging through dusty old tomes. Which Hutchinson's Books held as a hunter's library in return for a number of very nice tax breaks that kept it afloat. Hey, hunters believe in supporting local indie bookstores. Chucharak. Chuchark. But the CH is sometimes J and sometimes...
Those goddamn 17th century translations, I know. All right, fine. You still have your key?
Of course I still have my key. I am exceedingly unlikely to lose it, Hutch. And anyway, I built those fucking locks. They'll open for me anytime I want. I won't come by while you're in. Leave your notes in the usual place.
Thank fucking God.
I thought you liked me, Hutch.
You're hot, yeah, but you're scary. I'll work on it. Chutzcherak. Chaldean. Got it.
One more thing.
Ah, Christ.
Can you look up St. Anthony's spear?
St. Anthony didn't have a...
I didn't think so either, but check it. And check to see if there's any connection between Anthony and Marcus Silvacus. Just to be sure.
Fine.
Thanks, Hutch. I'll bring you a present.
Keep me out of this.
Red sauce penne with steak and fresh asparagus. Want some wine?
Please. You're a good partner, Saul.
Yeah?
Yeah. Avery wants to meet us at Mickey's. And then I've got some research to do.
Research?
I know. I don't like it either. Then we'll come back and I'm all yours.
I like the sound of that. Make yourself useful and open the wine, kitten.
Avery slumped in the booth. Directly over him, Humphrey Bogart stared somberly out of a framed print. Curly brown hair fell in Ave's face, over sad brown eyes. He looked like a handsome little mournful beagle. Despite that, he was quick and ruthless during exorcisms, seeming to come alive only when a particular possessor or Arceus was giving him trouble, or the victim started to thrash. Of all the exorcists I knew, he was the one who came closest to being a hunter, if only because of the sheer nail-biting joy he took in skating the edge of danger. We are all adrenaline junkies, really. You have to be. Hunting is 95% boredom-laced waiting, punctuated with the occasional bursts of sheer and total terror. No middle ground. Ave's badge hung on a chain around his neck. He had shrugged out of his motorcycle jacket and was staring at his fingertips like he had bad news. I gave a smile, but Ave didn't grin back. Not even a glimmer of his usual sleepy good humor.
Wow, looks grim.
Vixen swished her hips up to the table, her sleek brown hair clinging to her head like an otter's.
Hey, baby.
Hi.
She plunked down three fat tires, her lip lifting as she glared at me. Then smiled at Saul. He, as usual, looked supremely unconcerned. She turned on her heel, and her tartan skirt ticked back and forth as she switched away with a wear's grace.
Vixen's in heat again, I see.
So what's up, Ave?
I heard something, Jill.
Yeah?
One of my stoolies. He's a drunk. But he picks stuff up. It's amazing. He manages to get around. Anyway, he knows someone who saw something. And the worst thing is, I believe him.
What did he see? And what the fuck does this have to do with anything?
Guy's called Robbie the Juicer. He saw them dumping baby Jewel last night. Black van, no license plate. Said there were four of them. One looked to be a woman and two men. Last one was, well, said it was big and stank. And threw the body like it weighed nothing.
Big and stinky.
Yeah. He said it looked like an ape. Like it was furry. You think it could be a rogue wear? No offense, fur boy. I just thought I should ask.
The memory of the last rogue to hit Santa Luz was far enough away that I could consider the notion without a gut-clenching burst of slick-palmed fear. A rogue wear would hide the bodies. They wouldn't work with anyone else, either. That's why they're rogue. And wouldn't eat the organs unless it was starving. They like the muscle meat first. Who is this witness, and where was he?
My stoolie said something about a baseball diamond. Witness is homeless and sometimes sleeps in the dugout. He heard the van's engine and looked out. The van sat there for a while, and he decided to go take a look. Here's his name and vitals, and a list of the places he usually hangs out. He's scared to death.
He should be. This is nothing to mess with. Thanks, Avery.
I bet I'm not going to sleep for a while.
Behind my eyes, the vision of the edge of the park and the baseball diamond flashed, and I cautiously decided it was possible. The dugout was at an angle, and it was extremely possible someone hidden in there could have seen something. It was just slightly possible someone hidden in there could have been unremarked, which was the truly incredible part. Whoever this Robbie Juicer was, he'd probably used up his entire life's worth of luck. Avery looked up at my ware.
I'm sorry, Saul. Christ. This thing's awful. There's talk going around.
What kind of talk?
Talk of a bounty on wares. Someone's saying that this is a rogue ware, and why shouldn't the rest of them suffer for it? Let's talk about you too, Jill. That you're marked, and it's only a matter of time before the damn drag you back to hell.
Marked? By who?
I've been marked all my life, and I'm still around.
I don't know. But you hear shit, you know? Something big is going down, and I can't get more than whispers. You just be careful. We can't afford to lose you. Or your furry friend there.
Guess not. We've got Sarah's adepts in town, Ave. At least one. I pulled an Udhuruk out of a kid the other day, and there was a neophyme who said something about Chucharak before biting his poison tooth. You know that term?
I never was good at that prehistoric shit. I thought you didn't let the sorrows in.
I don't. When I find their bolt hole, I'm gonna burn them. Just watch yourself. You hear anything that sounds like Chaldean, you run.
You bet. But hey, be easy on this witness. He's not bolted too tight, I guess. And he doesn't want any police static, or I would have met him and brought him to you.
Go easy? I'm an easygoing gal.
I'll be gentle, I promise.
Yeah, right. Sure you will.
You're a cynic, Avery.
One day that's going to catch up to you. Instead of research, we hit the street looking for Robbie the Juicer, the nervous witness. It was a cold night. Clouds moving in from the river, but not fast enough to give us rain before 5 or 6 in the morning. The hard points of braver stars pierced the veil of night and orange city light. Outside the city limits, out in the near desert, the waning moon would shine on yucca and sandstone. It was a night for sharp teeth and quick death. The air itself was knotted tight with expectation. We canvassed the easier places on Avery's list first. The Missions, Prosper Alley, the Shooting Gallery on Trask Street, the Fountain in Plaskenny Square. Not a whisper of our target. Plenty of the people we saw that night had no idea we were there. I stayed close to Saul, and Ware camouflage took care of hiding us both. Wares are traditionally hunters' allies, and plenty of times a hunter has been grateful for the fur kind's ability to conceal. I was odd among hunters in that I actually slept with my backup, but by no means unique. Most wares don't like bed play with humans. We're too fragile. But with the scar on my wrist, I was no longer so fragile. It made things interesting. Just the way Saul's initial distrust and distaste for me and my hell-tainted self had made things interesting. Sometimes I wondered why he had come back. You can find bums in any city. Looking for a particular homeless man in Santa Luz is needle in a haystack frustrating. You just roll around a lot and hope to get stuck in the right place. Broadway was the second large mecca of the dispossessed in Santa Luz. I walked beside Saul carefully, occasionally glancing down at the cracked sidewalk, threading between groups of street kids gathering in doorways and sharing cigarettes of both legal and non-legal origin. Quite a few had bottles in brown paper bags, and a good number of them were younger than Baby Jewel. Dreadlocks, dyed hair, piercings, layers of clothing as they struggled to stay warm in the desert night. Gangs and street families drawing together for comfort and protection. It was enough, really, to make a cynic out of anyone. I caught sight of a thin, nervous-looking man with a scruff of brown hair, sharing hits off a bottle with a taller, scarecrow of a black man in army fatigues. The brown-haired scruff wore a dun coat and a red backpack, black boots, and a shocking blue t-shirt.
That him?
Coat, backpack, boots, and a serious case of nerves. Looks like it. Let's have a chat.
Wait.
What?
Someone else is looking.
I followed Saul's gaze. There, tucked into a slice of shadow like a professional, a skinny man in a long, dirty duster finished unsmoking a cigarette. The red eye glowed as he dropped it, and he was too clean-shaven to be a homeless man. And it's not just strange to see a homeless man drop a smoke halfway to the filter, especially when he doesn't take a drag before he does it. It rings every wrong bell in a hunter's head to see something like that.
Got enough metal on him for me to smell. He's hunting.
Mercenary? Or something else? I examined our new player. Was he looking for Robbie, or just for trouble? He didn't seem to have the nervous witness in his sights. but he was certainly up to no good. And if Saul could smell gunplay and violence on him, he was probably someone I should have a nice little chat with. You can call me paranoid, but I rarely believe in pure coincidence. Usually, coincidence gets a little help in a situation like this. I slid a slim, black-finished blade out of its sheath and reversed it along my arm.
Get her, witness. Question him if you feel like it. I'll see what's up with our little friend over there.
You got it. Where should I take the jitter boy?
Take him to Wu Song's and buy him dinner. But don't let him drink anymore. I'll meet you as soon as I can. Get every scrap of information you can from him. And play nice.
I will.
Saul looked, again, like he wanted to say, be careful. But he didn't. He merely bent down and kissed my temple. He left me without a wares camouflage. I set off across the street at an angle calculated to bring me into our mysterious visitor's blind spot. Unfortunately, I realized as I was halfway across Broadway, our friend wasn't alone.
His backup's on the roof. Nothing about this was usual. That usually adds up to one very fucked Jill Kismet.
I rolled, taking cover behind a parked car. Whoever it was had a fucking assault rifle and a bead on the car. The knife vanished, and I spared a brief prayer for the civilians scattering into the night.
No casualties, Jill. Except the ones I inflict.
These boys were not nightsiders. They were human, and professional troublemakers, unless I missed my guess. The one on the ground vanished as the one on the roof peppered the car. I tore the cuff off my right wrist and stuffed it in my pocket. As the air hit the scar, a flush of chill heat slammed through my nervous system. I could have dealt with these jokers with the cuff on, but I was feeling a little unsettled. Besides, why not use near invulnerability if you have it?
God, Jill, you've changed.
My own gun spun out, and I gathered my legs underneath me. I whirled, skipping back 3 steps before pitching forward, legs burning as I pulled on all the etheric force the scar could provide. My feet smashed into the car's hood, using the mass of the engine underneath to push against. Gravity loosed its constraints for one brief, glorious second. The only trouble with doing this is a simple law of physics. The landing, once you're going that fast, is a lot harder than you think. I smashed into the man on the roof, his ribs snapping like green wood. The rifle went flying. I hit the roof hard as I lost my balance, but bounced up to my feet.
This is why I wear leather pants.
I grabbed the man. He was in night camo and streaky face paint, and the sound of his breath told me one of his broken ribs had punctured a lung.
Shit.
Who sent you?
I'm gonna take you to a hospital and have them patch you up so I can break every bone in your body for shooting down at one of my streets like that.
Who? Tell me and you'll live. I held the man up one-handed, my fingers tangled in straps that were some kind of harness to keep his weapons on. He was armed to the teeth. He even had a couple of grenades.
Just the thing for urban combat.
Who, goddammit? The spray splattered me with blood and chips of bone. I tossed aside the corpse as I hit the ground for cover.
What the bloody blue fuck?
I extended my senses, felt nothing. The man in camo lay slumped on the rooftop, something protruding from his chest. I took a closer look. It was an arrow. The head was heavy duty, a nasty piece of work. Probably came from a compound hunting bow. I yanked the arrow free of the meat. I traced its path visually, both from sound and from instinct. Came up with a rooftop due east, higher up, a perfect place to lie in wait and shoot. The bowman was gone now.
Who uses arrows anymore? This is getting weirder by the second.
The scar on my wrist pulsed. I laid the cuff back against my wrist. It was hard to cover the puckered, seamed mark back up.
What if there's someone else out there with a bow trained on me? It might not kill me, but it would be a mite uncomfortable.
I remembered that there were sorrows in town.
A bow is just their speed, the filthy little Luddites. But why? I can't assume this is connected. But neither can I assume it's not. Great.
I stuffed the cuff back into my pocket, hefted the arrow, thought about it for a moment. A sudden bite of bloodlust swam across the current of darkness. I stepped to the edge of the building and leapt out into space. And just as I did, the secondary team moved in. A bullet smashed into my chest. Blood tore across the night sky. If I'd been human, it would have killed me. The knives slid into my hands. It was knives instead of guns this time, because I wanted some of them left alive. I hit hard, rolling. Wet splotch of blood on the pavement as my bleeding back pressed down briefly. Made it to my feet. I saw them, moving down the street in standard mercenary formation, with high-powered rifles and body armor. I took the first one with a knee to the midriff, snapping a few ribs. I knocked the gun out of his hand. Another kick sent him careening away, crashing into the left flank guard. I punched the secondary through the face shield of his helmet. A short kick, dislocating his patella at the same time.
You boys are really starting to piss me off.
Surrender now!
I threw my left-hand knife. It buried itself in one of the rear guards. That left four of them on the left wing. They were moving in to surround me, bringing in the flanks.
Well-trained. They're well-trained. Boys like this don't come cheap. Who's paying for this?
They weren't in a combat pattern. They were in a holding pattern. Suddenly, the thing streaked down the street, tearing through dappled street lamp light and shade, and it hit me squarely before I could even begin to move. The massive impact smashed through me, knocking the knife from my grasp.
Whatever it is, it's big and fast.
Its claws tore through my right arm.
Move! Move! Move!
The mercenaries retreated. The scar on my wrist gave out an agonized burst of heat. It stank. It stank a titanic, massive smell that tore through my sinuses and made me gag, bile rising hot and whipping through my throat. I hit the plate glass window of a pawn shop, which wouldn't have been so bad if this part of town hadn't needed iron bars so badly. My ribs snapped. I fell to the concrete. My eyes refused to focus. Even my blue eye refused to see what it was. Blood hot and slick on my face.
Cold. It's cold.
Frost starred the pavement. Little curls of steam slid up from my skin. My breath pluming in the air as I gasped.
Why is it so fucking cold?